What's up, gamers, and welcome to Lost at Sea Gaming. I am Hulking Yoda, the captain of this ship, the SS Gamer, and you have just stepped inside my captain's quarters, my weekly gaming update show where I talk about my favorite gaming news topic of the past week, discuss what games I've been playing, give tips on some of those games, as well as issue a weekly relevant gaming-related decree. This week, it's all about my favorite announcements coming from the Game Awards. So let's talk about it and dive right into the episode with my news catch of the week. Gamers, this past week, the Game Awards reached its 10th annual show. Now, to me, that's pretty insane because it does not feel like it's actually been a decade that the Game Awards has been in existence. But it has been a decade, and, you know, part of the reason probably is because over the course of that decade, I didn't really start actually watching the Game Awards or really paying too much attention to it until I would say maybe within the last 5 years, and actually sitting there and watching the show from start to finish, that's been only really the last 3 years, so that's probably why it doesn't feel as long as it actually has been around, but man, 10 years this thing has been going on, and, you know, me and my other gaming friends, we talk about the fact that more and more, essentially, the Game Awards is the new E3. You know, just recently, E3 was kind of confirmed, even though we already really kind of knew this, but it has been confirmed as officially dead now, which I've already had an episode earlier in the year about the end of an era and the death of E3, and if you want to check that episode out, definitely go and take a listen to it. It's very much looking back at my history with E3 and all the different fun and good times that came out of that show, and, you know, the Game Awards definitely feels on that same level as what E3 used to be at its peak. So it definitely, even though it sucks to see E3 go in the way that it was, I do appreciate what the Game Awards is. And, you know, let's face it, most people are tuning into the Game Awards to see the trailers. And I get it. I'm one of those people. I will also say I am one of what seems to be the minority that also is interested in who is winning in the different categories as far as the awards are concerned. Now, I obviously am pulling for games that I would favor in the specific category to win, but, you know, it's still fun, even when they don't win, to watch the show and to see who does win and to see what developers have to say. But man, gamers, this episode, this segment is all about the announcements that I saw that really just stood out to me and have me uber excited to look forward to the next 2 years, really, over 2024, 2025, and let's be real, probably into 2026, because you know a lot of these games are probably going to get delayed, as is inevitable within the gaming industry. So the first game I want to kind of touch on, I'm going to kind of breeze through these. I'm not going to spend any kind of exuberant amount of time really going into detail on them. I just kind of want to mention them, talk a few points about what I liked about them and why I'm excited for them and keep it moving. So we got a packed episode, got to keep it light. Now, the first game that I do want to discuss and touch on is a game called Exodus. Brand new, just announced at the award show, and it's a new sci-fi RPG from developer Archetype. And they actually, this team is made up of ex-developers from BioWare. And honestly, you gotta look at this and see that you can't not see that it is a spiritual successor to Mass Effect. I mean, a lot of the developers that are on this game were on the BioWare Mass Effect development team. So it would make sense that it is that kind of spiritual successor. They kind of want to branch off, do their own thing now. It looked really cool. I mean, it really was more of a cinematic trailer than anything else. But we did get to see some of the storyline. And Matthew McConaughey, you know, he was out there to promote the game and actually introduce the trailer because he is, I guess, voicing either a main character in the game or the main character. I don't know if this is where you customize yourself and you can have your own creative player or not. We don't have those kind of details yet, but I will say it definitely looked pretty cool. We had some very interesting enemy types that were introduced into the trailer, into the lore. It looks like the lore is going to be very, very interesting to try to follow and absorb as much as we possibly can as we play through. So Exodus, brand new sci-fi RPG in the vein of Mass Effect coming from Archetype in the future. Now, this next game is one that is probably very interesting for me to put on here, but more and more I'm attracted to this developer's games. It is Metaphor ReFantazio, and this is actually a game developed by the creators of the Persona series. Now, I have never actually played a Persona game, but I am very much looking forward to doing so come the end of January, because Persona 3 Reloaded is supposed to be coming out at the end of January, maybe around the 1st of February of next year, and it's going to be the first time that I actually delve into the Persona series. I've always heard very good things about them, and even a great friend of the show, Graveyard Gamer, check out his podcast right here on Spotify and many other platforms. Great gaming show. If you like mine, you'll like his. Now, we've talked about it for a while. He actually has one of the Persona games, Persona 5, if I'm not mistaken, and he has actually very much enjoyed what he's played in that game. Dropped around 20-plus hours into it, and just, I mean, he clearly recognizes it's going to be a 100-hour game for him, so he kind of picks away at it here or there. But he's always talked very highly of what he's played, and it's always been a very interesting sounding series to me. So I think I'm really finally going to give this series a chance when it comes to this next game. That even though it's not a Persona game, it is made by those developers, and the art style, the gameplay design, it all looks very, very similar to Persona. So if you like the Persona series, definitely check out Metaphor, ReFantazio, any of these games that I mentioned here. If you want those full details on what's the skinny on these games, I would recommend, highly recommend going online and just looking them up. But Metaphor, ReFantazio, coming at some point next year. Now, I will say this next announcement really surprised me, caught me off guard here, and that is God of War Ragnarok announced some free DLC coming to the game, which at this point, by the time I'm recording and by the time this episode gets out, it's already released and out there in the world for you to absorb if you haven't already. But I thought it was very interesting that it was even getting DLC, because at the beginning of the launch of the game, which was over a year ago now, believe it or not, Sony Santa Monica said there's no plans on any DLC or anything like that. But what was even more interesting about this DLC, it's not your typical, it's the continuation of the story, it's a new area. Don't get me wrong, it is both of those things. But it's also the type of gameplay that it brings with it. It's very much kind of like a roguelite game is what the gameplay is being said to be. So I'm very curious about it, and I would like to give it a shot. I am so booked, overbooked, more than overbooked, with all the games I'm trying to play through right now. So it is a little bit lower on my priority list, but it is something that I am interested in nonetheless. So at some point in the near future, well, probably not the near future, let's be real. At some point in the future, there may be a possibility of me explaining to you my thoughts on it or giving my opinion in a Captain's Quarters episode, but definitely not anytime soon. Now, the next game I want to talk about is Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown, and that is the brand new Prince of Persia game coming out in January, and it is not the Prince of Persia game that I wanted, because I wanted a full-blown 3D next-gen type Prince of Persia game, and even if it was the remake of The Sands of Time that's been pushed back and disappeared for years now, I would have taken that over this, but I'm not going to lie. This game looks awesome. It is a 2D side-scrolling, kind of a 2.5D side-scrolling, more realistically is what it would look like at least. And I'll be honest, the trailers that they've shown off, that Ubisoft has shown off of this game, have just continued to surprise me in the sense that I'm very excited for it, to be honest with you. I love the Prince of Persia series. I've played through and completed every game since Sands of Time, and I kind of want to play through this one. So I've kind of psyched myself up to get it. It's coming out January 18th. So if you are a Prince of Persia fan, definitely look forward to that in just about a month or so from now. And the cool thing about it too is, if you didn't know, Prince of Persia started out as a 2D side-scrolling game. So it kind of is back to its roots and origins in a way. Next up, we have Senua's Saga: Hellblade 2. Now, this game just looked absolutely jaw-dropping phenomenal. I mean, from the very beginning, the first trailer years ago that Xbox released for this game looked phenomenal. And, I mean, look, the first game, Hellblade: Senua's Saga, was an amazing-looking game for the Xbox One and PS4 as it was. But this game is just on a different level, man. I mean, just the clarity and the beauty and the detail of the graphics, the facial animations, the physics that are in the environment, and even with Senua and the way she moves and the animations. Everything. This game looks amazing from a gameplay standpoint. And from just a story and a psyche and combat, I mean, just everything about the game and the trailer, it was the most variety of any type of the gameplay that I've seen. And if you played that first game, you'll know what you're kind of in for as far as puzzles, world exploration, combat. It's all really fun and really good. And it just looks like it's been taken to the next level with this trailer. So I was a little disappointed because we still didn't get any definitive release date. We just got 2024, which I'm just like, come on, Microsoft. We got that same exact 2024 last year, a year ago, at last year's Game Awards with that updated trailer. So I was really, really hoping for like February or March or something in early of next year, either the end of winter or beginning of spring. And maybe that's still the case, but they didn't want to commit to any specific date yet. I get it, but like, come on, we've been talking about 2024 for Hellblade for now over a year, and we've been talking about Hellblade for 3 years because they showed the first trailer for it when they, actually 4 years, because it was the year that the Game Awards was the place that unveiled the Series X. And with it, there was that first announcement of Hellblade 2. But either way, I could talk about that for a while. We're not going to do that. We got to keep going here. Next up was one of my favorite game developers, Hideo Kojima. He had been said to have been working on an exclusive Xbox game, and this has been put out there for a while now. Nobody really knew exactly what it was going to be. I don't think that anybody really still knows exactly what it's going to be after this first official announcement trailer, but the name of the game is OD. Just the letters OD, and I'm assuming, and it looks like it is, abbreviation for overdose. Now, it's supposed to be a horror game, like nothing you've ever experienced before. It's supposed to be a game, but also a movie and also interactive and just completely new and unique and something that you've never experienced before. These are all things and buzzwords that were thrown out there by Hideo Kojima, Jordan Poole, you know, comedian and director of Us and Nope and Get Out, three horror movies that I love. Twilight Zone, his more modern rendition that went for two seasons. I love what Jordan Peele does with horror. I know he respects the genre and appreciates it. He sounded like when he talked about Hideo Kojima and his work and what he's done, how he's experienced Metal Gear Solid 2 and things like that. Sounds like he's the right guy to be partnering with for this kind of experience. The trailer looked like it was, I don't know if it was live actors or if it was just the graphics were that good for what they were doing. But man, I mean, either way, it was zoomed in and all you see is a zoomed up close up shot of the people's heads and they're just going through different kind of frantic repeating words and facial expressions, and it just looked really crazy. I don't know, but it's Hideo Kojima, so I'm sure it'll be really good. Just might be really weird, but that's okay. Next up, we had PlayStation 5 exclusive Rise of the Ronin, which comes out March 22nd of next year. Very excited to get an actual definitive release date, at least as of right now, for the game, because this game was first debuted probably a year or year and a half or so ago. I want to say it was a year and a half ago, and I thought it looked awesome. I mean, honestly, I'd rather have Ghost of Tsushima 2, but I don't want to sell this game short. It does look really cool. I will be honest, though. This newest trailer for it, which went a little bit more deeper into story. We saw a lot more gameplay. That previous trailer was really more about just kind of setting up the tone and the announcement of it all and more cinematic than anything else. We did see a bit of the glider, but overall, the game looks very much like Tenchu Stealth Assassins, kind of that old school stealth ninja game from back in the PlayStation 1 days. If you were around back then, you know what I'm talking about, but it looked like that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know. There was something about it that just looked familiar that didn't really get me as excited for it as that first initial announcement trailer did. And don't get me wrong. I know I'll probably be there day one on March 22nd to play the game. But at the end of the day, I still want Ghost of Tsushima 2. That would have got me over the moon if it was that announcement trailer as opposed to a release date trailer for Rise of the Ronin. But again, I don't want to take anything away from Rise because it does look like a really cool game. So we'll see. Gamers, this next game I'm going to touch on real quick. Oh, man. It was absolutely my trailer, my game of the show, if you want to give a game that designation. Jurassic Park Survival. And the reason why is because this was not kind of a real-time strategy game where you build your own theme park or, you know, no, it wasn't any kind of weird. It's not a rail shooter. It's not an arcade game. This is a full on next gen first person Far Cry-esque looking game set in the original Jurassic Park on Isla Nublar. And you are the character that is there the day after the events of the movie end. And you are left to survive for yourself. And obviously, the dinosaurs are running amok, and you have all these different things that have been left behind by all the different characters from the movie. And I absolutely cannot wait to get my hands on this. I mean, we saw very brief glimpses of actual gameplay. It was mostly a cinematic trailer. And at the very end, we saw a very brief glimpse of what it would look like, first-person perspective. And, you know, it's supposed to be a single-player, story-driven game, which is why I am alluding to Far Cry here, because that is very much, it just looks like Far Cry. And I can only imagine, oh my God, it's a Far Cry game, but you're in Jurassic Park. And that is amazing to me because I love the Far Cry games. So if it's that kind of exploration and freedom on that island of Isla Nublar, and it's all these different nostalgia, Easter egg type things that are left behind from the movies for you to discover and explore, and just, it's going to be a wet dream for me, to be honest, because I have been waiting for a true Jurassic Park game in this style for, 30 years, you know, since the movie first released. I mean, obviously I didn't know back then what I would be wanting now, but my point is, this is the kind of Jurassic Park game that I've been waiting for and wanting for so long, and I cannot wait to get my hands on it. I have no idea when it's coming out at this point. It's very early in development, so it's going to be a while. I would say either late next year, or probably not until 2025 at this point, so cannot wait. It actually started out, it's a canceled game from previously, from years ago, that was revived. So that is actually pretty awesome. A little tidbit there for you. Next up is Black Myth Wukong. It very much looks really cool, but I don't know. It's kind of like a Souls-like game, and I don't know if I'm just going to be in the mood for that when it comes out. But we did get a release date, which is August 20th of next year. So if you've been looking forward to Black Myth, I know it's been out there for a couple years now, I feel like, in the preview stage. So it's finally got a release date. So hopefully about 8 months from now, we'll be able to finally see what it's all about. Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League is February 2nd, 2024 now, coming out. And if it doesn't get pushed back any further, I just can't get behind this game, guys. I don't know what it is, but I know what it is. It looks like it's basically Crackdown with the Suicide Squad characters put into it. And, the first Crackdown, I really put some time and tried to get into it, but just couldn't. And what I mean when I say Crackdown is you really just see the characters in these trailers jumping around and floating in the air and shooting in the air. And there's not really, I don't know, it feels like a waste to me. Nobody asked or really wanted a Suicide Squad game. I don't know why Rocksteady is being wasted doing this. I still feel like they should have done a Superman trilogy of games after doing Batman, because I feel like they could have done it right. And I just, another reason why I'm annoyed with Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League, because it's set in Metropolis, and it's like, damn, man, you guys are wasting that location of Metropolis. Like, you did an amazing job with Gotham City and the Arkham Knight game, and, you know, with Arkham City and all that. You could have really done something special with Metropolis and just a diehard Superman game, but you ended up going this route. And I don't know if there was pressure from WB, who owns them, to do this game or not, but either way, just very disappointing looking for me. Now, Tales of Kinzera Zao is a game that's coming out from Silver Rain Games. And I was very intrigued, and honestly, maybe it's a little bit of my heartstrings here is why I'm more drawn into it. But it does look really fun. It's a 2.5D side-scroller. But one of the CEO of the company is, if I'm not mistaken, if I understood it correctly, he was Bayek, the voice actor in Assassin's Creed Origins. And he was just talking about his inspiration for the game and his father who he had lost and all these different things. And I'm just like, man, I want to play this dude's game. And so, regardless, the trailer looked fun, the game looks cool, and I will definitely be checking out this game when it comes out. It looks like it'll be out in April of next year. So keep an eye out on that. Look out and check out some previews and some trailers for that game. Trust me, it looks pretty cool. Now, next up we have Lost Records, which is the next game from Don't Nod, the Life is Strange development team. And it very much looks like Life is Strange. If you played any of those games, you'll know what I'm talking about. A group of young teenagers, and looks like they get into some mess, and there's some supernatural elements going on here. But it looks cool. It looks like it's maybe it goes back and forth between the 90s and present day, and something happens with this group of kids in the 90s that they kind of have a pact with each other, and they, you know, have to go back to the woods for whatever reason in present day. I don't know. It'd be very interesting to see what exactly it all shapes out to be. Don't know if I'll actually play it or not, but it was an interesting note that I wanted to bring up in this segment. Next up is a game that I kind of knew was coming, possibly because it was leaked a little early, and that is from Arkane Studios, the studio that did the Dishonored series, and that game is Blade. Now, I am very, very excited for this game. They've already come out and said straight up, this is a single-player, story-driven, narrative-focused game, third-person, and it's done in the visual style and the creative style that Arkane is known for and loved for, and I can't wait to play it. You know, I know that some people may have pause when it comes to the visual style that Arkane chooses to use, but I don't know, it's kind of like a realistic, animated look to the character models and to the world. I've always enjoyed the game worlds and characters that I've played as and with in the Arkane games that I've played, and I don't think I'll have any problems with Blade. I very much trust Arkane. I know that there are some little hiccups here or there with Redfall, but at the end of the day, I do think that they're going to be given the time to put in the TLC and the love for this character. And I'm just super stoked, man, because, I mean, no console war BS, to be honest with you, but as far as, like, being an Xbox exclusive, I just think it's kind of cool that finally, okay, cool. Well, Xbox now has potentially, I know it hasn't been 100% confirmed yet, a Marvel exclusive character as far as a game is concerned. Now, the reason why it's still out there, you would assume that it's exclusive because Microsoft owns Bethesda, who owns Arkane. So therefore it kind of, it's up to Microsoft whether it's going to release multi-platform or not. And I'd be shocked, to be honest, if they allowed it to go to PlayStation. But time will tell. We have seen crazier things in the gaming industry. Next up, Sega released a trailer that I just thought was so nostalgic and awesome and cool. And it was all about, I mean, you had the whole classic Sega and the Dreamcast logo from back in the day. I mean, it was just all kinds of really cool nostalgic stuff there. And it was basically to announce 5 brand new games that they were in development on right now. And they actually showed clips of all these games. Jet Set Radio, Shinobi, Golden Axe, Crazy Taxi, and Streets of Rage. Now, on this show, you'll also see in the channel way back when, a couple years ago, I did a review for Streets of Rage 4. Check that out. Love that game. Played through it with my wife and son. Had a lot of great times with that. Golden Axe looked really cool from this trailer. And so did Crazy Taxi. That was one of my favorite classics from back in the Dreamcast days. Shinobi, I'm always down for. And Jet Set Radio, I mean, I loved it on Dreamcast. I loved the one they had, Jet Set Radio Future on the Xbox, the original Xbox. So I'm down for some more Jet Set. So bottom line is, Sega was hitting me with the nostalgic feels there during the show. Can't wait to see what all these shape out to be. Now, the next thing on this list here that I got for you is was a big surprise. We knew something was coming as far as DLC for Final Fantasy 16. I just didn't know it was coming as soon as that night. Now, Final Fantasy 16, they announced and showed a trailer for 2 brand new expansions that are coming, Echoes of the Fallen, which was announced right then as being available right now, and Rising Tide, which comes in April. If you didn't know, check out my review for Final Fantasy 16 to see how much I love that game. And check back at the end of my end of year episode to see how it fared in my top games of the year. Does it win my game of the year? I don't know. You have to check out and see. But bottom line is, I immediately, as soon as I was able to, bought the expansion pass for these 2 expansions. I can't wait to get back to that game world and see where these stories take me. And just, I loved being in that world, its lore, and the characters of Clive, and just everybody. I can't wait to get back to it. So if you like Final Fantasy 16, you got some expansions out there, some more excuse to get back into that world now. Next up was another big surprise for me, was a Supermassive game. And I love Supermassive. They've done The Quarry, Until Dawn, and the Dark Pictures games. And I've played all of them, loved all of them to certain varying degrees. But when I saw a Supermassive game come up and that logo, I'm like, ooh, what is this? What is this? And it was actually a game called The Casting of Frank Stone. And this is the first single-player focused game that's derived from the Dead by Daylight universe. So I've never played Dead by Daylight, but this game looks really cool. And I'm all about single-player, story-driven games. I'm all about Supermassive games. So I, regardless of ever having played Dead by Daylight or not, I will be there and 100% be playing this game. So I can't wait. I just want to know what happened to the season finale of season 1 of the Dark Pictures anthology game that was supposed to be out this year, that was the sci-fi setting, because that looked really cool and I was really looking forward to it. Haven't heard anything on it, so would love to know what's going on with that. But The Last Sentinel is another game that was announced, and that looked really cool. It almost kind of reminded me of the Terminator, something to do with like mixed Terminator and Mass Effect from a gameplay standpoint, a story, and kind of that same kind of vibe standpoint. But it was a futuristic Tokyo where it looked like people were half machine or all machine, or I don't know. But there's this one chick who's like the main hero of everyone, and she just came in and was pretty badass, taking out different androids, robots, and I don't know. Overall, check out the trailer is all I will say, because it looked really cool. It's from Lightspeed Games, the developer, and looks really cool. So I'll definitely keep an eye on that to see what more details we see there. And the last two games that were shown off, the next one is Visions of Mana, which is a brand new Mana game. If you've ever heard of Children of Mana or Legend of Mana, those are classic Square Enix RPG series games. And I have not played one in a while. But Visions of Mana looked awesome, and I will definitely probably be checking this one out. So I can't wait to see more on it. And then finally, the last game on this list was Monster Hunter Wilds. And this is officially not out until at least 2025. But Monster Hunter is a series I've long wanted to get into. I've kind of dabbled in Monster Hunter Rise and Monster Hunter World, but I really want to lose myself to one of these games. So maybe Monster Hunter Wilds will be the one that I'll be able to do that in. And that will hopefully be sometime in 2025 as of this recording. So gamers, that was all the games that really tickled my fancy at the Game Awards this past year. A lot of great stuff, a lot of great adventures and experiences and stories, hopefully coming sooner than later. I enjoyed talking to you about them. But now, after all these games that are very much I'm looking forward to playing, let's go check out my captain's log and see what games that I have been playing. Gamers, believe it or not, it has been over a month now since I have last issued a Captain's Quarters episode, meaning it's been over a month since I've last updated you on all the amazingness that I've been playing and experiencing since then. And last we talked, I was really talking about my first impressions of Spider-Man 2 and what my minimal progress at that time was in Assassin's Creed Mirage, which, I mean, man, for it to just be over a month ago, it feels like much, much longer than that since I have beaten Spider-Man 2. So to put that out there, if you hadn't already seen on the channel, I do have my review with very detailed thoughts on the game as a whole and all different aspects of it. So check that out if you want to see what my final thoughts and review score were on that game. Now, I did mention that I had played through a little bit of Assassin's Creed Mirage at the time of that last Captain's Quarters episode. And over the course of time, once I beat Spider-Man 2, Assassin's Creed Mirage became my focal game at that point. And since then, I have, in fact, completed that game as well. I am very happy to say, for both Assassin's Creed Mirage and Spider-Man 2, I was successful in not only getting my quest for 1,000 G that I had wanted to do and get all 1,000 gamer score in Assassin's Creed Mirage, but I also got that amazingly beautiful platinum trophy in Spider-Man 2. Now, I know for those of you that have listened to the show before, that was a little backwards there. Typically, it's the music segueing into me declaring which games I'm going to go for platinum in or get 1,000 G in. But given the disparity in time between my last Captain's Quarters episode and this one, I figured, you know what, let's just combine them and boom, here we go. But I gotta say, I was super stoked. That was my 14th platinum on the PlayStation family of consoles since the inception of trophies. So definitely moving on up there in the world of PlayStation. And it's the same thing for me with my gamer score. I know I typically have had for years now my monthly update on my trophy level progress and gamer score quest goals. But I am not going to have that for this month. It's just been so long, and I will update you guys at a later date. But while we're here, as far as my gamer score is concerned, I got to put it out there that, man, for years now, I've given myself an annual goal of reaching 300,000 gamer score. And gamers, I think I am right there. I am so close to doing it finally. I am less than 2,000 gamer score away at this point from reaching that goal. It's just a matter of getting through some of these games that I have left on my docket, so to speak. And A lot of those games I'm going to talk about now as we delve into them, but I do have a few what I like to call quick hits that I want to discuss that are games that I did dabble in, as I like to say as well, over the course of the past month. And the first game I'll really just kind of touch base with real quick, because I've only played about an hour of this game, and that is Ark Survival Ascended. Now, I've never played the Ark series before this, and you know, survival games for me are kind of hit or miss. I'm interested in that kind of a gameplay style, but I also get very either frustrated or bored with that style of gameplay when I do play those games. The only game that really has just, man, hooked me and I really, really enjoyed for hours at a time what I was playing in that genre was The Forest. So if you haven't played that game and you're a big survival fan, definitely check that out. And also with Ark, when it comes to it and that series, I was always kind of under the impression too that it was more multiplayer centric. And while that definitely is a massive part of the game and its infrastructure is playing with friends and those online, you can definitely play it single player, which is how I prefer to play my games anyways. So Ark Survival Ascended, if you didn't know, is the remake of the original Ark Survival game that came out years ago. And this remake is done in Unreal Engine 5, and just watching the trailers and honestly always kind of being interested and curious about the Ark games, because I mean, it's like you're a caveman, if you will. You're back in the prehistoric times with dinosaurs and all kinds of stuff going on, and it's basically you got to survive. You got to get all the resources and things together and craft weapons and start, you know, hopefully populating the human race and building villages and getting and teaming up with people and creating weapons, taming dinosaurs so that you can ride and get into combat with in conflicts with other people who you play online or just other enemies throughout the game world. So very cool concept and something I was always interested in. And I'll be honest with you, just the Unreal Engine 5 aspect of it and the visuals and the trailers they had for the game, it just always looked really cool and alluring to me. So when it came down to it, I couldn't help it. I went ahead and bought it, and I've played an hour since then. And it was two different half-hour sessions. The first half hour was pretty bad, I'll be honest with you, because trying to figure out the controls and the implementation and type of what the game wanted me to do. I mean, there's no hand-holding in this game whatsoever. And look, I don't necessarily need my hand or want my hand to be held, but a little bit of direction would be nice. Basically, I kind of had to fumble around and just kind of happenstance figure out what I had to do. And you can clearly tell this game was designed for a PC in mind, as far as the control scheme and the way things are set up and laid out on the screen and the end game as you're playing. But it wasn't a detriment to me. I was still, I mean, the graphics, obviously, the Unreal Engine 5 aspect did not disappoint. So that was definitely a plus. Controls weren't bad. It wasn't necessarily the controls themselves are bad. It was just trying to figure out what they were and what everything did. And yeah, I mean, they do have a settings and, you know, control layout option that you can look up and see what all the different buttons are supposed to do. I don't really know how to explain it other than it's still more confusing than it may seem when you're just in the game. You know, overall, my second half hour was much more enjoyable because it didn't die as much. The thing I hated about this is the spawn point that you start out with, they already have all these smaller, tinier dinosaurs that are already right there. And as soon as they get anywhere near you, they start running after you and attacking you. And I mean, you're essentially outside of a loincloth, a naked caveman. So, or at least I am, depending on how you create your character. I did like the created character. That was pretty cool. I created a character I thought was pretty resemblant of me as far as best as I could. And once you get into the game world, I mean, man, like I said, it was just immediate. These dinosaurs are just coming right at you. And it's not even like the game gives you an opportunity to kind of dip your feet and slowly wade into the deep end, if you will. There was none of that. It was just like, boom, here's the spawn point. And yep, you got carnivorous dinosaurs running at you immediately. And because you have no protection, you're essentially naked. I mean, you don't have but a few, so many hits you can take and you'll die. So I died quite often in that first half hour of time playing. And there is no icon that'll pop up on screen when you get near items that you can pick up or interact with. And that was throwing me off. And again, 30 minutes is not really a long time at all. And that doesn't take into account the created character screen, which probably was close to half of that my first time playing it. But because there was no icon popping up, I didn't necessarily know that I could just press the Y button on the Xbox to pick up anything. And there's none of the interactable items are highlighted either. So you don't know necessarily what you can interact with, be it from an icon, a button icon popping up on screen, and even if it's like an outline around the item that you can interact with, there is nothing indicating what you can interact with. And that kind of bothered me. And then accidentally, I came across the fact that, hey, if I just sit here and punch a tree, it will give me resources from that tree, specific resources tied to that type of tree or plant. So, I mean, there was a lot of things going on there, but man, I was just ultimately, I can tell it's going to take way too much time to get into that kind of a game for me than what I'm willing to give to it. And my patience is just not there. I don't have the time. So there's just a lot of things going on there. So we will see what happens with that. But that was my experience with Ark and that series, you know, about an hour or so's worth of frustration initially that turned into like, okay, I'm slowly starting to figure out how to play this game. And, you know, it was more satisfying, obviously, once I realized what I had to do and how to do certain things. So maybe I just need to give it more time. But for my first hour into it, that was where I came out of. That's how I came out of it feeling. So next up is a game that I played that kind of surprised me. I didn't really expect to get back to it at this exact moment. And I only played it very briefly. It was maybe for about a half hour that I played this. And that was Mortal Kombat 1. Now, I'd already talked to you about my initial feelings on the game when I first played it, when it first released a couple months ago. But I had been wanting to get back to it ever since. There was just so many other things coming out between Starfield and you guys know the list of games that has come out and that I've been sucked into over the past few months. But Mortal Kombat was one that I still want to get back to and play through the actual story. The first time I played it, if you didn't hear that episode, I did play through the tower matches to get the story, the ending for Scorpion, who's my favorite character in the series. This time I decided, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and play through the next character that I want to see the ending for, and that is Reptile. He is probably my second favorite character in all of Mortal Kombat. And I had to wait for an install, an update, and that was going to be a nice little chunk of change as far as time. So I was like, you know what better time than now to play Mortal Kombat 1 while I'm waiting for this update, which lasted for probably about a half hour or so. But it gave me enough time to, in fact, play through the tower matches as Reptile and get his ending for his story in this game. Thought it was really cool, and ultimately, man, that game is awesome. I mean, if you're a Mortal Kombat fan and you haven't played it, I definitely recommend checking it out. I can't wait till I find time at some point. Hopefully I do actually find that time, but it's a lot of fun. Now, because I was in the mood for fighting games, and because before I played Mortal Kombat, I actually played this game, and it was the anniversary edition of Killer Instinct. Now, it's been, believe it or not, 10 years since it released, which means it's been 10 years since the Xbox One launched because it was a launch game for the Xbox One. I played it that launch night after getting home midnight and booting up my Xbox One and setting it up. That was actually the first game that I played on the console was Killer Instinct. But I never went back to it after that. I might have played it for a little bit the next morning. But ever since then, I haven't played it in 10 years. So given the fact that it was the anniversary edition, it's on Game Pass, it's got all these different updates that are supposed to kind of refresh it, if you will, for the Series XS versions of it. So I really wanted to give it another shot and just kind of play through the game with Cinder, who was my favorite character in the original games way back in the day in the arcade and the Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64. Back when the series was actually really, really popular, Cinder was always my guy. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, if you can't tell from the name, he's the guy who's made out of like molten lava, essentially. And I just, for whatever reason, he was the guy that always stood out to me, and I loved playing as him. So he was not in the base game that released at launch. You had to wait basically if you wanted to play as him for DLC. And by the time he came around, I was no longer playing that game. So I finally got an opportunity to play as Cinder, and it was a lot of fun. That game in general is a lot of fun. And man, I got to tell you, stacking it up against Mortal Kombat 1 and then just kind of, I really, really would love to have the opportunity to get into some fighting games and just kind of lose myself to them and really allow myself to get into them like I did back in the day. Tekken 8's coming out in January. I mean, there's just a lot there, but Killer Instinct, had a lot of fun with that. Gargoyles Remastered. If I have not mentioned it before, because honestly, at this point, I can't remember if I mentioned it to you guys that I tried it out, But in the time since I've last had a Captain's Quarters episode, I played it some more, and I played about a 45-minute time frame for it, gaming session, if you will. And during that time frame, I was able to play through the next stage, which has multiple levels to it, in the game, and defeat that stage 2 boss and move on to the third stage, which is the city. The second stage was actually kind of like a medieval keep or castle, and it was really cool. But I'm not gonna lie to you guys, man, those old school games, they are absolutely infuriating as far as some of the difficulty is concerned, where whether it's the amount of damage that you take from getting hit by enemies, or just the cheap shots from enemies, or the lack of collision detection when you're trying to attack. Oh man, there's just a lot of things there. But overall, I still have enjoyed playing what I've done in the game through those first two stages. I mean, it's Gargoyles, the property. I loved it as a kid, so I couldn't resist. And it's really cool switching back and forth between the graphic styles, whether it's the remastered visuals where it looks just like the cartoon, or it's like it looked just like back in the day on the Super Nintendo. And I will say, to be honest with you, I actually found that when I switched it back to the Super Nintendo graphics, it actually helped me sometimes in certain scenarios to figure out what to do and where to go. So it was actually kind of funny to me that ended up being the case. But another old school remaster or collection in this case that I played since we last spoke was the Jurassic Park Collection, Classic Games Collection, I should say. And this consisted, if you didn't know about it, it consisted of the Super Nintendo, the Genesis, Game Boy, all these different games that came out during that era of gaming. And I never got a chance to delve into these games back in the day. And if you didn't know, I am a massive, massive, massive Jurassic Park fan. I mentioned that earlier in the Captain's and the catch of the week, actually, the Jurassic Park game that was mentioned at the Game Awards is the game I'm looking forward to the most out of all the games that were shown off. So when they first announced that they were coming out with the Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection, I was pretty excited for it because, again, I never got a chance to play these games back in the day. And this is before the new Jurassic Park game was announced or I knew existed. So it was like, man, this may be the only opportunity that I have to experience Jurassic Park in a digital form. So for me, the biggest one, for whatever reason, that was always drawing my attention was the Sega Genesis version of the game, because there is the 16-bit version, and then there's the Sega Genesis version. And I'm assuming because of licensing and whatnot, they can't, and copyright, they can't use the name Nintendo in their Classic Games Collection. So I'm pretty sure the 16-bit designation is a stand-in for the Super Nintendo version of the game. But for whatever reason, if you grew up in that era, Sega Genesis games always kind of took the nod graphically and just in general, sometimes feature-wise, over the Super Nintendo version. So for me, the Sega Genesis version of the original Jurassic Park game is what drew me to it first. And I did play a couple of hours in this game, and I really enjoyed what I played. I played through the first three or four stages as Alan Grant. I didn't know this, but the game actually has two different campaigns. You can play as Alan Grant, one of the main characters of the movie, or you can actually play through a campaign as a raptor, which I thought was very interesting. So I didn't check that out. I was really kind of focused on the Alan Grant stages and campaign, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, you start out at the bottom of the ravine, you know, where in the scene in the movie where Alan Grant and the kid, Tim, they get thrown over the side of, I guess you'd say it's basically a cliff, in the car. And then at the bottom is when they start, you know, just kind of trying to go through the forest and make their way. Well, in the game, Tim is nowhere to be found. So I don't know what happened to little Tim, but it's just Alan Grant. And you kind of control him from there and make your way through the woods. And you make it to a electrical facility and you make your way through that. And then the third stage was probably one of my favorites so far, arguably my favorite. You actually have a river rapid experience. Your different parts of the stage have you trying to collect fuel to use for the raft to get up and down different waterfalls and dodge enemies and attack enemies and pick up collectibles and icons and stuff. It was a lot of fun. A little frustrating in certain spots, but overall, I enjoyed my time in that. So definitely put some time into some classic 2D side-scrolling games and fighting games. That was a lot of what I did this past month or so, but it wasn't all I did. Next, I gotta go over four games that I have put a lot of love into since we last spoke. The next four games that I'm going to share with you gamers are four very, very different kinds of games, but they're all four games that had my interest at different points, and I am Honestly, very glad to share my experiences with you because I have thoroughly enjoyed all four of them. I'll just kind of preface by saying that. And the first game I really want to touch on is the one that I spent the least amount of time in, and that is a lot of people's game of the year, Baldur's Gate 3. Now, for me, Baldur's Gate as a series, I've messed around with Neverwinter Nights on PC. I played through and loved Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance and Dark Alliance 2 back on the PS2 Xbox era. So that's really about the extent of my Forgotten Realms or Baldur's Gate experience, but they were all very good ones. So I always was interested in Baldur's Gate 3, but with it coming out around the same time on the PS5 and PC as Starfield, and at the time my hype level being more so for Starfield than Baldur's Gate, I was like, you know what? I know it's coming out on Xbox. I'll wait until that release. Well, obviously, if you have paid attention in the last few weeks, it was announced right after the Game Awards that Baldur's Gate 3 was available now to purchase for the Xbox. So that very next day, I jumped right on the Xbox and downloaded it. And I have put about 5 hours into it. I wanted to get a decent little chunk in just to kind of get a good feel for what the game had to offer. And I gotta say, I love my time in the game. The character creator is always fun in most games for me, and it was no different in this game. I went the route of being a human, and yeah, I was very tempted on going either the elf route or some of the other very interesting. They have gnomes and orcs and or half orcs, I should say. And there's a lot of different options that you can choose from as far as when you create your character. So they had a lot of great options there. And once I got into the story of the game, I absolutely loved the prologue. I thought it was amazing. If you know anything about Dungeons and Dragons in that universe, then you know what I'm talking about when I refer to a mind flayer. And let's just say they played a big part in that opening scene, and there's just this epic sequence that takes place on a mind flayer ship. And it absolutely captivated me and hooked me from the start. So the story, amazing. Graphically, amazing. I love that the camera. It doesn't just have to be far distance, top head, overlooking you from above. You can zoom in. And I found myself over the course of the 5 hours kind of zooming in, zooming out, depending on what I was doing and how I was, traveling throughout the environment. But the environments are great. I mean, obviously, you start out on the Mind Flayer ship, which is really cool, and a lot of cool stuff you can do there. But once you got out into the first environment, after that, I mean, there was just a lot of things that you could appreciate. It was kind of like this mountainous coastal type setting. And so you got to see a lot of things on display here visually, from the lighting with the sun and, the water of the ocean or the seaside that was right there on the shore that you're on, as well as the different grass and greenery. But there was also some cool stuff that you could do. I mean, obviously, what is Baldur's Gate without dungeon crawling? And there was a couple of different dungeons that I was able to go through. There was a crypt that I was able to take out some enemies and find some cool stuff there. And then there was an abandoned chapel that had been kind of swallowed up by the forest. And I don't know, there was just a lot of really great stuff here. The combat is definitely, I won't say it's hard or difficult, but I will say that for me at least, being kind of rusty with this kind of combat, and it is very much turn-based combat. So you choose and select what moves you want to do for your characters, and it will then switch over to like the game pauses for you to allow you to choose these different moves, and then you can kind of move on from there and allow the enemies to attack you and do their moves. So it's very much turn-based, and it's been a while since I've had a straight turn-based RPG that I've been playing. Most of them are real time. I am not opposed to either. I don't have a problem with either turn-based or real time. I don't even know if I have a preference, to be honest with you. Because I love things about both. So, really enjoy the combat, but I'm a little rusty, and you start out at level one in this game, rightfully so. And man, I was getting my butt kicked quite a few times throughout the course of my 5 hours. And let's just say that chapel I was not able to fully complete because I could not, no matter how many times I tried, get past a group of enemies in there. They just kept kicking my butt. So I was moving on from that, but I met a lot of interesting characters that I added to my party. There's a lot of dialogue options that you can choose from when interacting with most characters. The characters that join your party, you can go back to a campsite, and that allows you to fully rejuvenate your health and certain items and things like that. You can talk to your different party members while you're there. And if you're trying to initiate or grow relationships, whether it's romantic relationships or just in general, find out more about the characters that are with you or pick up side quests from them, that kind of thing. You can do all that from the campsite, which I thought was really cool. It was just something really, really awesome and a good feeling about this game when I was playing it. I don't know how to explain it other than that. Music was great, voice acting was great. It was just top notch, and I could definitely see why it was in that conversation for Game of the Year and won a lot of Game of the Year awards. So Baldur's Gate, great time in that 5 hours I played. Next up is a game that, man, I have been super stoked for ever since I saw it released and saw the trailer for it. You know, there were some times where I was like kind of questionable. Is it going to be corny? Is it going to be just kind of a poor developed game? But I am very emphatically excited to say that that is not the case for RoboCop Rogue City. So I could not resist. I was trying to be strong and not purchase another game, considering all these other games that I had that I was trying to play and focus on and get through. And I just couldn't help it. I was talking to my good friend Logan Phoenix over at Graveyard Gamer, the Graveyard Gamer podcast. He and I are very big fans of RoboCop. And man, I couldn't take it. I had to get the game. So I ended up purchasing it. And I dropped about 8 hours into this game over the course of time that I played it over two different play sessions. And man, it was everything that I wanted it to be and more. It was a thousand times better than what I honestly expected it to be. And not that I expected it to be garbage or anything, but I just did not expect it to be on the level that it is. I mean, from graphics to sound and voice acting and the music from the original movies and the original actor in the first two RoboCop movies, he is reprising his role both in facial scan and in his voice in the game. And that just adds to the immersive aspect of it for me as far as, man, this is RoboCop. So I've loved what I had read about the game going into it, that there's, you know, a kind of an open-endedness to certain areas when you go into these, I'll call them maps. One of the first maps that you go into is kind of the streets of Detroit. And it's not a massive area, but it's pretty decently sized. And throughout the course of your exploration of this area, you can pick up side quests. You can also do random police work, like if they're like handing out tickets for cars that are parked in front of a fire hydrant, or you know, just people who are littering, throwing trash into the river, just things like that. You can issue tickets if you want. And I thought it was cool because depending on what you do and how you interact with some of the citizens that are there, it increases it affects your loyalty to the job and to the law. Or it can affect positively or negatively your public perception, the public perception of you as RoboCop. So a lot of different choices there, a lot of great things. And just again, the detail in the environments is just really, really well done. It's very immersive. And, you know, I was kind of worried about the gunplay when I saw some of the trailers because, you know, RoboCop's, you know, targeting and his lock on, just the visuals of it, I thought might be a little bit distracting for me, but not at all. And I absolutely love the gameplay and the gunplay. I thought I haven't used a single firearm outside of RoboCop's side piece, and I refuse to be honest with you, gamers. I want to stick just to that side piece, that classic pistol that comes out of RoboCop's leg. That as of right now, unless I'm forced to, I will not be using another firearm in that game. Now, there are a lot of other options that are really cool that you can use in the game. You can pick up computer monitors and, you know, just all kinds of any other objects in the environment that are interactive, and you can launch them at enemies. And because you're RoboCop, I mean, you can launch them pretty quick, and they can typically take out enemies with one blow. You can also grab enemies and throw them or do an instant kill. One cool thing that I did in the opening training level, it's a skyscraper and it's kind of like a newsroom type building. And either way, you're very, very high up on one of the top floors of this building. And I was curious if you could do it. And sure enough, you can. You can grab an enemy and throw them out the window and watch as they scream and fall to the ground. And I mean, maybe that's kind of morbid for me to enjoy that, but for whatever reason, I enjoyed doing that in the game. So there's just a lot of different options for you, and I could not have asked for a better gameplay experience and for any kind of interactive experience for me to feel like I'm actually RoboCop. It's one of those games where it's like, oh man, Batman Arkham makes you feel like Batman. The Spider-Man Insomniac games make you feel like, well, same thing here. I mean, this is the first game that I've played that I feel like really, man, I feel like RoboCop. I never played that game on the original Xbox. There was a RoboCop game that came out on that console generation. Never played that one. Heard it wasn't that great, so I don't know how that was. But the only experience I have is kind of those side-scrolling action beat 'em up games from, you know, the 90s that were on Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, those RoboCop or RoboCop versus Terminator, those kind of games. So that's all I really got to go off of. So, man, I'm absolutely in love with this game. And from what I've heard, it's done well. So I hope that it means that we have a franchise on our hands here. But there's a lot of other stuff you can do too. In between missions, you will go back to the police department and you can interact with your crew, do little side missions there. There's a shooting range that has some fun challenges that you can go after to try to complete. There's also a different rating that you get for each job that you do with the different maps that you go to after, you know, alternating basically in and out of the police department. So I've just thoroughly enjoyed that game, and I cannot wait to get back to it, to be honest with you. It's probably my next focal game that I'll make as that priority for myself after I complete one of the next games that I want to talk about. But before I get to that game, I got to talk about this next title that I spent roughly 12 hours or so playing right when it first released, and that is Like a Dragon: Gaiden, the man who erased his name. Now, if you guys didn't know, this is Like a Dragon. The series now is called Like a Dragon. It used to be the Yakuza series. And, you know, I've played and dabbled in multiple Yakuza games. You know, I dabbled in Yakuza 0. I dropped 40 hours in Yakuza Kiwami and still never finished the game. And I did put a decent amount of time, maybe 8 hours or so, into Yakuza Like a Dragon. But this is the first one that I was like, you know what? It's a shorter game in the series as far as comparatively to the other games in the series. I really want to try to focus and beat this one. Plus, it just sounds cool. I love Kiryu, who's the main character. He was the main character all the way through the first, I want to say it was 7 Yakuza games, if I'm not mistaken there, Yakuza 0 through 6. And then you had Yakuza Like a Dragon, which was a brand new saga with a new character of Ichiban, which I really liked Ichiban as well. But there's something special about Kiryu from the time I spent with him in Kiwami, and just as much as I enjoyed my time with his character in that game, I was actually really super stoked to get back to playing as him in this one. And with Like a Dragon: Gaiden, there was a lot that I loved about it. Kamurocho is the main city that most Yakuza games take place in, but this game took place in different areas, and some of the area that was also in Like a Dragon. But I love the story from what I've played so far. Graphically, it's a gorgeous looking game. Gameplay wise, the combat is great. I love the new agent style of fighting, and I love the fighting system where you can alternate between the different fighting styles again, as opposed to the RPG approach that Yakuza Like a Dragon took. But I've absolutely loved using the spy gadgets, and, you know, in the middle of a fight, whether it's calling in drones to attack people or just in general, especially the little spider device or gadget that you can use that grabs people and kind of like, think about Spider-Man and like his web shooters. It's almost kind of like that, but it's like a whip, I guess, is a better example. It's, you throw it around and lasso an enemy and can throw them around and toss them around, toss objects in the environment at them. Really, really fun stuff. And if you played the Yakuza series, then you'll know what to expect when it comes to all the fun stuff that you can do and mini games and all kinds of stuff there is to do around these different cities and places that you can go to. I love that in this game, the business system is set up, because every Yakuza game has some sort of business that you can do as kind of like a side piece. Most Yakuza games, let me clarify that. And this one is no different. You have a business partner and you can do things with her. And basically, it's just kind of building up your rapport with the people in the city. And you use different money that you earn from doing these different side jobs, if you will. Strolling patrols, I think is what they're called. So it's a lot of fun. And there's just a lot of really cool upgrades that you can do within that system for your character or just in general. So I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with Like a Dragon: Gaiden. I really, really would like to get back to it. Maybe after I finish up, RoboCop and this next game that I'm going to end my Captain's Log with. And gamers, that is Alan Wake 2. Gamers, I am uber excited to be discussing with you my first thoughts and impressions of Alan Wake 2. If you listen to my episode a little while ago, I had a hype episode for the launch of Alan Wake 2, and I kind of explained in that episode where my history was with the franchise and the previous games in the series. So if you're interested in that, go check out that episode. But right here, right now, this episode, I want to talk 100% about my experience with the game so far. Now, to kind of give perspective, at this point, because it's been so long since I've recorded a Captain's Log, I've actually been able to put about 25 hours into this game. Now, some of you might be saying, well, wait a minute, have you already beaten the game? I mean, 25 hours, I didn't think this was supposed to be that long of a game. And in general, I would say for just the main story, it's probably not much more, if not less, than what I've already put into it, if you're just focusing on the story. But if you've listened to this show, gamers, you know me. I am vastly, vastly OCD when it comes to the in-depth exploration that I do and just kind of losing myself to a game environment, especially if I'm really, really into it. So a lot of my exploration is where the time comes from, to be honest with you, and really just kind of, there are some backtracking in this game as far as once you get to certain points, you can now have an item like bolt cutters or screwdriver that unlocks areas or gives you access to certain things that you previously didn't have access to. So I personally, as soon as I get those new items that give me access to these new chests or new areas on the map, I immediately then go back to and try to access them as opposed to moving forward with the story. So let's just start first off with the visuals of the game. And I mean, even in the previews, I thought, man, this game just looks gorgeous. And it is absolutely not a disappointment in that department when actually playing the game. So I am playing the game on an Xbox Series X. I felt it just kind of made sense for me, at least, as far as my legacy with the series and the fact that I had already played the previous original game, as well as Alan Wake's American Nightmare on the Xbox 360. So for me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I'm playing this on the Xbox. So graphically, as far as the consistency of character models within the environments, as well as the details and all that, I mean, it's just a gorgeous game. It really is. It's an extremely detailed game. The physics that are at work in the game are great. I mean, character movement. I mean, just everything you could want from a game. I don't want to go into like an in-depth review here, but bottom line is the game looks and moves and just it looks great. So when you get past the visuals, I mean, honestly, just like in the first game, and honestly, in any Remedy game, I feel like the voice acting and the sound, the music, they're always so well done. And for me, since the first Alan Wake game, if you played that game, then you know of a band called Old Gods of Asgard. They were a in-game lore or in-game world rock band that played a big role in that game, to say the least. And they are back in this game, and there's different songs and stuff, but I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil anything for you. But bottom line is, music has always played a very big integral role in the Alan Wake games, in my opinion. After you beat every chapter, there's always a song that plays, and the songs that Remedy chooses for these games are always very, very much like close-knit to what the story is and the plot details. So I always appreciate that. The controls are just perfect in this game. I cannot complain at all about the controls. It's a over-the-shoulder, third-person survival horror game. So very much if you played Resident Evil 4 or any of the more recent third-person Resident Evil games, or honestly, any more recent survival horror games for that matter, Dead Space, Callisto Protocol, they all kind of have adapted that camera angle, if you will, since Resident Evil 4's release on the GameCube all those years ago, back in 2005. So for me, I mean, everything about this game from a technological, from a design standpoint is just perfect. And after all that, I mean, honestly, a game could have all that, but if the story doesn't grab me, then what else is the point? I mean, for me, it's that is the driving force behind moving forward and wanting to progress in the game, is to see what happened next, to see where we go next. And this game is definitely not a slouch in that department. Now, I'm not going to lie, I was very kind of confused at the beginning of the game, even though I had already played through both Alan Wake and Alan Wake's American Nightmare. I was a little confused, but as things start to play out, it was like, okay, all right, now I'm kind of understanding what's going on here, and I'm very much in the mix of it at this point in the game, 25 hours in. Gamers, I just can't say enough how much I've loved it, because, you know, everything that I loved about that original and what made that original game unique, you know, utilizing light as a weapon and a secondary offense, if you will, to use with your guns or whatever weapons you have at the time. Because if you didn't know, in the Alan Wake games, light hurts the enemies. And the only way that you can truly kill an enemy that's coming at you is by removing its kind of a shadow shield that they have on them. And the only way to do that is by shining your flashlight and kind of focusing that flashlight beam. And on the Xbox, it's by holding the RB button. And that slowly or quickly, however you want to kind of look at it, drains away that shadow until pop, you know, it's gone. And then they're susceptible to any kind of, whether it's gunfire or crossbow bolt fire or whatever you're doing. There is a very weak melee attack option in here as well. Flares are also another option that you can use, whether you just light one and walk around holding it, or you can get a flare gun, which is amazing once you get a hold of that. But there are so many different ways to utilize light to take out these enemies. Some enemies, they're actually just shadows and they can be taken out just by the light. But most enemies that you encounter, at least in my experience so far, you're going to have to drain them of that shadow shield and then, you know, take them out in a very, you know, normal, typical way with your, whether it's a handgun or a crossbow or whatever weapon you have at the time. So for me, I really got to address the two different characters in the game. I was very much apprehensive of going into the game, and at first when it was announced, the fact that there was a second playable character and that it was mandatory in a way that you kind of alternate between the two throughout the course of the game. Saga Anderson is the name of this character. She's the FBI agent that you probably would recognize if you've seen the gameplay trailers or any kind of story trailers. She is the main protagonist that you start the game playing as. And, you know, I was very much like, man, you know, it's Alan Wake too. I want to play as Alan Wake. I love this character of Alan Wake. I want to see what's going on with him, not Saga. But the way that Remedy does it, and I'm not going to lie, when I first started playing the game, for those first quite a few hours, I would say for me, the way that I play, as far as my exploration and the thoroughness that I do with it, it took me about 6 hours before I ever started controlling Alan Wake for the first time. I will say that first 2 hours of the six, I was like, man, I'm enjoying this, but I want to play as Alan Wake. Where is Alan? Thankfully, after I got into it, though, the next 4 hours, by that point, I was really kind of drawn into Saga's story. And not just her as her own individual story, because there is that going on in the background, but it was also the story that she is finding out and experiencing in real time with you as the player in Bright Falls. She comes to Bright Falls because there is murders going on and just really just strange things happening. So the FBI is called in to investigate these murders, and she's a part of that. So you as the player get to help her investigate Bright Falls, whether it's, you know, Crater Lake and its surrounding forest and, you know, the town of Bright Falls and all the weird people that live there and the locations that are in and around Bright Falls. Like the one that I was looking forward to the most, and if you watch or look at my Instagram, man, I got a lot of great screenshots, I thought, from Coffee World, was an amusement park that's nearby in Bright Falls or right outside of Bright Falls in a little town called Waterly. And there was just a lot of great theming going on in Coffee World. And so my point is, the locations that you go to with Saga are extremely different than what you're going through, the locations and the type of exploration that you're doing with Alan. And the stories are completely separate from each other and completely different from each other. And there's also a lot of different gameplay mechanics going on between the two. And I have loved it. It's like I'm literally kind of alternating back and forth between two completely different games, and it's just so good. Now, there are shared mechanics between the two characters, like the mind place. So I know you've heard, if you played Sherlock Holmes games, there is a thing called a mind palace where you can kind of go into a menu screen, if you will, and try to look at all the clues that you've gathered on your investigations and piece them together and see what clues connect and what outcomes come from connecting certain clues. Well, instead of calling it a mind palace in Alan Wake 2, they call it a mind place. And both Saga and Alan have their own mind place. And when you go into this mind place, you can look back at different collectibles that you have, like different, you can listen to radio talk show host segments that you've picked up as you've walked around the world. You can watch TV commercials and other TV things that you found on TVs as you're walking and exploring around. There's the manuscripts that you can look at that as you collect them, they will pop up in a location in the mind place. But the biggest thing, especially for Saga, she has a table where she does profiling, as any FBI agent would do, of the people that she's trying to go after and different people that are involved in an investigation. And so she can profile, and this kind of gives you details of the person and kind of collaborating the different thoughts that she's come to on her own, as well as the different facts she knows from interacting with these people or hearing about certain characters from other characters in the world of Bright Falls and Crater Lake. In addition to that, though, both Alan and Saga have a case wall. And on this case wall, each character has multiple cases that at a given point they're trying to solve. So you have different pictures and different things that you can add to the case wall as you find clues, as you find new things going on that are related to those cases. And you can, you have to decide which case or which, kind of like a skill tree almost, if you look at it that way, but how all the things connect. You have to choose where the picture is going to go, what spider web it will connect to, if you will, of clues. So I really enjoy doing that and just really kind of enjoying the feeling that I'm actually involved in trying to solve a case in both sides. Now, obviously, Saga, as I've stated, she's in the real world and the state of Washington, going in and around different areas, like I said, Bright Falls, the town of Watery, all these different places, right? Well, Alan is in the dark place. And if you've played the previous games, then you'll remember and know what the dark place is. So we never got to really do a whole lot with the dark place in the previous games. So it's been actually really cool to maximize, honestly, Remedy has this location and this game. And essentially what it's been so far, the dark place, at least in Alan's experience, is an alternate version of New York City. So everything looks very much like New York City. It's very rainy a lot of times, and it's dark. It has a certain kind of a certain color hue to it, kind of a goldish tint to the coloring and the lighting in the areas. And I've loved it. I mean, there's the above ground, just the city area that you can walk around in, and there's rooftops and different things you can access. But there's also the subway system, and the way that you explore this environment is totally different than the way Saga explores hers. Yes, it's still third person over the shoulder and all that. That's not what I mean. There's actually a clicker, we'll call it, that is kind of like a lamp that Alan, once he gets acquires it. At that point, there are certain lampposts that are in the environment at certain locations that when you come up to them, certain lampposts, you can drain light from it and it will change the environment. Or certain lampposts that are flickering, you can add the light that is in the lamppost if you drained a previous lamppost that you've come across. So bottom line is, you kind of play that back and forth game with the lampposts and the light to manipulate the environment back and forth to get it to the right type of environment that you want, but it also opens up access to different collectibles and different access points. So I have loved that. There's also a different way that Alan deciphers and figures out his cases, the way that he lays out the different clues that he has. You actually do that within the environment, and you see how when he uses his typewriter to write into existence different alternative things within the environment, how it affects it instantaneously. So you have the SSD on full display on whether it's the PS5 or the Xbox or on a PC, but I mean, it's instantaneous. And so it's just amazing to see that tech at work. And I've thoroughly enjoyed that and love seeing that. And each alteration, for the most part, there's different things that you can find in the environment. Typically, whether it is a main item or environmental cue that you need, it doesn't always work out that it's something that you need, but it could be just something that's interesting or collectible or something like that. And just to put that out there, the collectibles are amazing in this game. I'd already mentioned the manuscript pages, but there's also these nursery rhymes that require these different dolls. And that's a Saga-only puzzle that you have to kind of figure out. You decipher the rhyme, choose which dolls need to be used on these different chalk scribbled areas, and you'll see what I'm talking about when you play the game. But those are really cool. There's also lunchbox stashes that are lying around that give you pieces of manuscript pages, which is what you use to upgrade your weapons. There are different things with Alan that you can utilize, like their power words is what they're called, where if you find them, kind of, it's almost like a blacklight situation where when you shine your light over these circle of words, and you zone in on them, then ultimately you'll unlock whatever power word that it is. And that's how you can upgrade, whether it be your maximum health or increased flashlight usage or those kinds of things. That's how Alan does it. Manuscript page pieces is how Saga upgrades her weapons. And I mean, the weapons in the game are fun. I've already mentioned a lot of them previously. My favorite at this point is the crossbow, easily, because man, I mean, it's reusable. It's constantly refillable. You don't have to worry about, typically in my experience so far, having to seek out and find and hope that you get more crossbow bolts, because more often than not, it doesn't happen every single time with every enemy, but more often than not, I have been able to reclaim the crossbow bolts that I've used on a killed enemy. So that is awesome. I absolutely love being able to replenish my ammo just about every enemy encounter. So it allows me to conserve and save my bullets for whether it's the shotgun or the pistol or any other weapon that I choose to use at the given time. Now, Alan doesn't have the crossbow, but he has a flare gun. So that is great for obviously clearing out big groups of enemies, because that will definitely happen. I would say Alan is more so the group of enemies kind of guy as opposed to Saga. But gamers, I can't tell you enough how much I have loved this game. It allows you to alternate back and forth at your leisure and your discretion for the characters after a certain point. In the beginning of the game, you have to start out a Saga and you play to a certain point with Alan. And after you play through a certain portion with him, the game then lets you know, hey, you can switch back and forth between either character at any point in time at the janitor buckets. So there's janitor mop buckets that are, you know, there's like a spill on the floor around them, and basically you hold the A button and it kind of sucks you into it, if you will. It's kind of weird, but it takes you back and forth between the realities. So I personally have just been kind of going back and forth, alternating. Hey, I complete a chapter with Alan, I go back to Saga. I complete her chapter, I go back to Alan. So I've been trying to do it in that way. I feel like that's the preferred way to do it from the developer standpoint, but I also, it is my preferred way of doing it. I don't feel like I would be happy or content if I just sat there and played straight through Alan and then played straight through Saga. There's almost like a dangling carrot that I intentionally, like I self-inflict upon myself by alternating between the characters. Because by the time that I get done with the chapter with a specific character, no matter who it is, Saga or Alan, I'm like, man, I don't want to leave this character's story, but I am. And that's the beauty of it, is because by the time I'm ready to get done with the other character, I've forgotten about the other character's story, and I'm ready to get back to do the next chapter and say Alan. So it's just awesome. It's extremely well designed, and it's a great game and a great experience so far. 25 hours in, oh man, I just absolutely love it. And I hope to continue sharing my experiences with you going forward. Now, a little bit different for me. If you've listened to my show before, this is a Captain's Quarters episode, and typically I have buried treasure gaming segments, which have tips and tricks for you in the games I'm playing, and all kinds of other different things like Captain's Decree, where I give you a weekly decree on something specific in the gaming realm of things. This week in this episode, I'm not doing that because I feel like I'm so far behind as far as not having an episode for so long that this episode is already long enough, kind of covering everything that I have. So I'm going to leave this episode with this and my final thoughts on Alan Wake 2 and impressions that I've had over this past couple of weeks that I've been playing it. I hope you enjoyed the episode. My next episode will be coming hopefully sooner than later, and that should be looking back at the year that was gaming in 2023 and my Game of the Year announcement. That'll do it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed your time aboard the SS Gamer. You can join its crew by reaching out to me via email at lostatseagaming365@gmail.com, as well as searching for Hulking Yoda on the Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo Switch networks. You can also find me on social media on Instagram, X, and Threads @LostAtSeaGaming. Thank you for listening, and until the sea says otherwise, we'll keep sailing.